Oh, baby, I'm so hungry.
Ooh, I am too. I've got a rumbly in my tummy.
This is going to be a bad podcast to be hungry because today we're talking about food.
I know. I am so excited. This is foodie destinations all across the United States.
Yeah, so we're going to be bringing on Ann Klump, one of our great writers. She's the writer that writes our food section in our magazine every issue. She is a food aficionado, and we're going to be bringing her on the show today to talk about the top RV destinations for foodies.
Yeah, so get pen and paper ready because you're going to want to write these places down and fill your belly.
Put your seatbelts on.
Here we go.
Did you know that 46 million Americans plan to take an RV trip in the next 12 months? 90% of recreational vehicle owners take three or more mini vacations every year. Welcome to the RV Destinations Podcast. If it's RV travel, we're talking about it. From campgrounds to museums to national and state parks, kayaking and hiking opportunities. One of the most fun and pleasurable things you can do is just hit the road. So be ready to be inspired. Welcome in to the RV Destinations Podcast. Now your host, President Randy Beheimer, and Editor-in-Chief, Callie Beheimer.
Hello, and welcome to the RV Destinations Podcast. This is the podcast series where we talk everything about RV destinations all across the United States and Canada. I am Callie Beheimer, Editor-in-Chief of RV Destinations Magazine. Couldn't spit that out quick enough because I was so excited about this intro today of R-A-N-D-Y, 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 and Randy is his name. Oh, ha! How is that? I was thinking of that on the drive home from the gym this morning. He's the president of RV Destinations Magazine. Hi, honey. You have no words.
Crickets. Crickets. I hear birds. I read something in my inspirational message that said, if you don't like something, just ignore it.
I'm not going to go away. On the line with us today, we have Ann Klump. Ann is one of our writers for the magazine, and she is one of our permanent writers. She writes our food section. So, Ann, every time I read your food section in the magazine, I'm just like, well, I want to go there and I want to try all these restaurants. So, hello, Ann.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be with you guys this morning. So,
yeah. Yes. Yes.
Now, where are you at right now? You're full-time RVer. We should put that out to everybody. Yeah. And then, so you're in Texas somewhere. Is that correct?
We are currently parked in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Ooh.
And we're full-time RVers and have been. We're just about to celebrate our fifth anniversary. So,
wow.
Been on the road about 5 years and moving generally every 2 to 4 weeks. So,
oh, perfect.
Pretty awesome. Chance to get out and to try to explore the restaurant scene wherever we are, however big or small the town may be. So
right now I'm gonna piss off all our writers because I'm gonna say Ann is the only one that writes in every single issue. Now we've got a lot of amazing writers. We really do.
Oh, yes.
But I was so dead set on having a food tour in every single issue. I approached Ann and I said, Ann, will you write this? And you know, I promise you every single issue. And I got to tell you, I have never seen someone take better pictures of food than Ann.
They're beautiful.
And you just use your cell phone, correct?
I do use my cell phone. It's a Samsung S23, so it's got a pretty amazing camera that's part of it. I actually took pictures of an owl up in a 50-foot tall palm tree.
Oh, wow.
Last week. And I should send you a picture because you'd be so shocked at how good the picture came out for how far away I was.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, definitely send it over. Well, you can even text it to me. You've got my cell phone number, but yeah, no, these images are amazing. Every time her article comes out of design, it just, I'm wowed by the pictures and her writing too. I don't want to downplay her writing. Her writing's amazing. I mean, you really do a great job for us and we appreciate the relationship and look forward to many years continuing to work with you.
I love having an excuse to go out to eat.
Right, yeah, exactly. I know. And I think that's one of the things that RVers love to do, you know, whether you're full-time or part-time or, you know, can just do it a couple times a year. You know, one of the things that we all love to do when you travel is go to a new place and you try the food, you try the local food. So
right.
I think our little food tour the article that you write for us in every magazine is perfect for that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's one of the best parts of traveling is eating local food. I mean, I'm a kind of a foodie myself. I enjoy it. I love it. And it's neat to see the different takes on different foods.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah, you get that. When you go out, you get that chance to experience the local food. But you also really get to be more entrenched in local culture.
Yeah.
Whether it's the people that are waiting on you, or like Brian and I love to go and sit at the bar and talk to the bartender and talk to the locals that are sitting at the bar next to you and get a feeling for what are the things that they love about where you are and how would they best show their area to a friend or a family member who was coming to visit for the first time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So feeling the culture.
Yeah.
Sure. And then also getting locals' opinions on which are the best restaurant, because you and I both know we've had this conversation offline. Mm-hmm. You know, we both went into Asheville, you know, at different times, probably 8 months apart.
Right.
And there was one touted restaurant there. They were like, this is amazing. It got all these awards, all these reviews. We went there and Callie and I were just like, not my thing. And so I was curious to see how you like, and you came back with almost the same exact report card.
Right.
Yeah. And so sometimes
it was very disappointing.
It was.
But that's really neat. We trust your judgment. We love your articles, and your article is actually one that we don't pre-read. We pre-read most of them, but yours we don't, because now there are some other writers that we don't pre-read that have been writing for us for a long time, but yours we definitely never pre-read. So, and then mm-hmm. I was just thinking that, you know, because you're a freelance writer, you can deduct every time you go out to eat because you're writing on that.
That's right.
I'm sure you guys are doing that. If you're not, you should be.
Well, I don't know if that's legal or not, so we should probably not talk too much about that.
Well,
there's a lot of research and development that happens as part of our lifestyle.
Yes.
So.
I got you. But I would think, because we've got proof that you're, and I'm not a CPA or a tax person at all, but you've got proof that you're writing articles on food destinations. Mm-hmm. So, I don't see what the problem would be. But
I never write it off if I don't take pictures.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. If we go and I am having a night out without my camera, and that happens every once in a while where I want to just not do anything.
Oh, for sure.
Then I don't write it off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because it's not really research and development at that point.
Sure.
Yep.
Now, we might go back to that restaurant because we think it's awesome and I think it deserves to be included in an article, and you have to go back and we'll write it off that second time or whatever.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Well, very, very cool. So I want to start off with fun facts about food today.
I was going to say, what kind of fun facts do you have?
Yeah, I know. I was sitting there thinking like, and first of all, I had this thought in the middle of the night of bringing Ann on, as I said. Mm-hmm. And so I was really excited. I know we're going to talk about different cities that are great for foodies. But so I was like, how can I tie in fun facts here? So I just looked up fun facts about food. And there's a lot of them. I've got 88 of them here. 88? I'm not going to read all 88.
Oh, good. I think we get a little tired.
No, some of these are fun.
Okay. Because, hence fun facts.
Yeah. So I'm gonna read through a few of them here. So the very first one is pound cake got its name from its recipe. The early recipes of pound cake called for 1 pound of butter, 1 pound of eggs, and 1 pound of sugar.
Oh.
So that's where it got its name.
Yep.
Most supermarket wasabi is actually horseradish. Real wasabi is challenging to make and very expensive. As an alternative, most wasabi for sale is colored horseradish with flavorings.
Good to know.
The most expensive pizza in the world.
That's interesting.
It makes me question good sushi. You know, if you go to like Kroger's around here and get sushi from there, it definitely tastes different than if you go to a sushi restaurant.
I thought wasabi was a form of horseradish.
I did too.
That's why I'm confused.
Well, I'm going down a rabbit hole now.
I'm going to Google that while you talk.
Yeah. Well, I think it's in the family, but I don't think it's exactly the same.
Well, it's Japanese horseradish.
Okay. Hmm. So maybe they're using American. I don't know. I didn't write this. The most expensive pizza in the world costs $12,000.
What?
That's because it takes 72 hours to make, and it can only be made in your home by three Italian chefs.
Oh, okay.
The pizza is topped with three types of caviar, bufala, I think, mozzarella, lobster from Norway, and salentio. I'm not sure what salentio is. Maybe you do know what it is. And pink Australian sea salt. But they come to your home and they put the pizza together.
Three Italians. I feel like it'd be pretty authentic.
There you go. Ranch dressing is dyed.
Oh.
One ingredient is titanium dioxide, which is used to make it look whiter.
Right, which is sunscreen.
It's the same ingredient that's used in sunscreen and paint for coloring.
Oh, I don't think I'm ever going to eat ranch dressing again.
I know.
I'm going to go throw the bottle that's in our fridge out right now.
It's so tasty, though. Oh. I love it.
That is so gross.
So one fast food burger can have the meat from 100 different cows.
Oh, no. You're ruining food.
It sounds like a crazy amount, but the ground beef used to make burgers both in fast food places and grocery stores is made from a collection of muscle tissues. That makes sense. All right, here's another one. Fruit-flavored snacks shine because of car wax. Yep, the same wax that's used on cars, Canuba wax, is the same type of wax that's used in gummy candy, glossy sheen, to give the candy a glossy sheen.
So if I run out of car wax, I can just get a bag of gummy bears and rub it all over the vehicle?
Yeah, right. All right, so don't...
Let me know how that works, Gilly.
Yeah, so hopefully none of our listeners here have a drug problem because... Nutmeg is a hallucinogen.
What?
That's right. If you ingest nutmeg in large doses, it works like a hallucinogen due to the natural compound called myristicin. I think, forgive me. It's a mind-altering drug in large doses.
This is why people love pumpkin pie.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Crackers have holes in them for a reason. Basically, if they don't have holes in them, the air bubbles will break the cracker apart.
Interesting.
Ketchup used to be a medicine. It used to be used as medicine. Back in the early 1800s, people thought that tomatoes had medicinal qualities. One doctor claimed that they could treat diarrhea and indigestion. So he made a recipe for a type of tomato ketchup, which then became a pill, a ketchup pill.
Oh, gross. I have so many questions and thoughts, and then at the same time, I don't want to know.
You know, when you said we'll get kind of bored after I read these, I'm like, you're not going to get bored because I read through a couple of these beforehand. This is probably a known thing. White chocolate isn't actually chocolate. The name is deceiving because white chocolate doesn't have any components of regular chocolate. It's just a mixture of sugar, milk, vanilla, lectin. Is it lectin?
Lectin, I think.
Lectin and cocoa butter. Yep.
Lectin.
Okay, that makes sense. Again, this is a Kentucky education being pushed to its limit with some of these words.
Yes.
Farm salmon is dyed pink. Wild salmon is naturally pink because of all of the shrimp they eat. Meanwhile, farm-raised salmon have a different diet and end up being white. Oh. However, they are fed specific plant pigments to get the same hue as wild salmon.
Interesting.
Or gross.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a really good one. The red food dye for Skittles is made from boiled beetles.
What? Boiled beetles?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God. This is giving me so many reasons to eat, like, organic, like, from my own garden. You know, oh, my goodness.
All right, so I'm gonna butcher a few words here. Please forgive me. Everybody's used to it by this time. A common red food dye, carminic acid, is made from the crushed bodies of beetles called the Dicolopolis coccoeus.
Good job, babe.
Well, nobody can prove me wrong because they're not looking at the word. Right. I know somebody's out there. There's some engineer out there, some chemist or something that's like, oh, you're such an idiot. But that's okay. This acid is used in the cherries, the
Bing?
Mariachi.
Mariachis. Those little
maraschinos.
Thank you.
Mariachi's a Mexican band.
That's right. That's it. That we'll get in Tucson in a Mexican restaurant. The acid is used in maraschino cherry, strawberries, raspberry flavored candies, and lipstick too. So there you go. Crackers are worse for your teeth than sugar. Acid is the biggest cause of tooth decay, not sugar. Crackers tend to stick to your teeth, which ends up being a breeding ground for bacteria. Hmm. All right, let me see. American cheese is not actually American. It's actually made in Switzerland. They back in 1911, they made American cheese basically to increase the shelf life. Russia took a long time to classify beer as being alcoholic. Up until 2013, beer was considered a soft drink.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And wow. Now they've classified it as alcohol. So I didn't read this one ahead. We're almost done here. Cheese is the most stolen food in the world. Cheese. Yeah, let's read what they say here. Like wow. I said, I didn't read
it. That's interesting.
In fact, it's stolen so much, it has its own percentage. About 4% of all cheese made around the globe ends up stolen.
Oh my gosh.
There's even a black market for cheese.
What?
That's crazy.
That's insane. That would explain why cheese is so expensive. You get a little wedge and it's like $12.
Yeah, yep. Okay, I've got two more and then I'm going to end it here because we could go on through all 88 of them. These are all hilarious. And I'm getting these from thefactsite.com. 100, actually, there's 100, not 88. 100 random food facts. So if you want to go up and read the rest of them. But number 19 is a corned beef sandwich was smuggled into space. That's right. An astronaut snuck a sandwich on his spacecraft for a six-hour mission. When he took the sandwich out in zero gravity, it started falling apart. He had to put it away before crumbs compromised the spaceship.
Could you imagine getting written up for that one? Listen, Bob. You took the sandwich into space. Now we have breadcrumbs everywhere. It's going to cost us about $2 billion to fix the spaceship.
Could you imagine him entering orbit wrong because a corned beef got stuck in the...
in a controller or something?
It was only a six-hour mission. He couldn't go without a corned beef sandwich for that long.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
He was hungry.
I could just see that. Like, I don't know if it's a Reuben or what, but the beef and the pickles and sauerkraut starting to float through the air. That could be interesting.
There are so many things wrong with that idea, Randy. Yeah, not even going to start.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so the last one I'm going to read here, this actually I think I've heard, but chocolate has been used as a currency in ancient civilizations of Mexico and South America. I did know that. As the Aztecs started dominating Mesoamerica, they also loved cocoa beans, which couldn't be grown in their civilization. They had to rely on the Mayans and traded cocoa beans with them as a system of money. So chocolate isn't the weirdest thing that's been used as currency in the past, though. Potato mashers apparently were used as currency at some point. So anyway, that is really about it.
Who knew?
Maybe we should end on a McDonald's one because the next one's McDonald's. McDonald's sells 2.5 billion hamburgers every year. That equates to 75 McDonald's hamburgers sold every second, every day, or 6.5 million hamburgers a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
insane.
All right, that wraps up the fun facts for today. Those were some good ones.
That's horrifying.
It is. It really is. I'm like, wow, because you see the little thing on their sign, you know, where it's like it was 1 million served, and now it's up to 2 point some billion served. And
oh my gosh, see, I accidentally looked onto the next one.
Yeah,
you can find peanuts in dynamite.
Oh my gosh,
peanuts! Peanuts have an oil that is used in the ingredients while making glycerol, which is the main component of nitroglycerin. So, all right, I'm done. I'm going to stop looking at the computer. Okay.
I think we should talk about some more delicious food outside of
absolutely
beetles used to make Skittles. And
now that we've ruined everybody's appetite,
yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. All right,
let's warm it back up.
I'm not hungry anymore, but thanks, Randy.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh, okay. Huh. I think I'll skip lunch today.
Yeah, right? I was worried that I was going to be so hungry after talking to you guys for my top 10 list of foodie places. But, Randy, you help, you know, put me back on track for
maybe an early dinner.
Late dining day.
Well, let's get to the good stuff and let's get ourselves and other people hungry again, because there's so many great foodie destinations that you have been to. And we're going to start at number 10, which is Napa Valley. And, you know, a lot of people just think of Napa Valley for all the wine, but you've obviously have done some great food eats there. So what are some of your favorite places or some of the favorite dishes that you had that came out of Napa Valley?
Yeah, I mean, really, nothing goes better with wine than food, Yes. So there are so many great restaurants that are right there. And probably my favorite place that we went to when we were there was Morimoto in downtown Napa. You maybe are familiar with Morimoto from the Iron Chef competitions.
Oh, yeah.
But Morimoto was always one of the Japanese chefs that competed in Iron Chef. And I'll tell you, I'd wanted to go to one of his places for a long time. And so finding that he had Morimoto in downtown Napa was like, all right, seal the deal. So the best sushi I've ever eaten in my life was there at Morimoto. Was so delicious. The rice perfectly cooked, perfectly seasoned. The fish sliced, cut, you know, as fine as could be so that it just melts in your mouth. That was really, really outstanding. And then the other place, it's kind of funny because we were just talking about McDonald's, and we did not go to McDonald's in Napa Valley. We went to Gott's Roadside, which has always been, you know, I was in the wine business, and so I've made a few trips to Napa over the years, and always the place that I had to go was Gott's Roadside, which used to be called Taylor's Automatic Refresher. And it's like a fast food, but you have to imagine it's fast food, Napa Valley style. So when I tell you that you have an ahi tuna burger, that's one of their top selling things on their menu. And it is the freshest tuna, seared perfectly with a great sauce on it. And then garlic fries on the side. It's fast food, but it's fast food Napa style, and it's really, really fantastic.
I've already forgotten about crushed beetles already.
I have too. That is long gone. You were describing
thank you,
this.
Anne.
Yes, you were describing this food.
You're welcome.
I'm literally out there right now pulling up Gott's.com because I'm like, oh my gosh. And they have all this food, the Texas avocado burger, bacon cheeseburgers, California. Oh, yes, yes. Sign me up, please.
Yeah. You know, there's two locations in Napa. There's one that's in downtown Napa, but the original one is up in St. Helena, and it has this big outdoor area where you can hang out and your kids can run around and play games. And you can just go and order your ahi tuna burger or your chicken schnitzel sandwich. And I mean, it's like fast food, but elevated beyond what you would really think of for fast food.
Yeah. And I see that they even serve beer and wine. So, I mean, you can get either,
they do,
by, you know, wine by the glass or the bottle, or grab a beer along with your, you know, burger, which I love that, you know, for what you're calling like a kind of like quick food, but like you said, at an elevated level. That's cool.
I want to get back to the sushi because I absolutely love it. It's funny. For most of my life, I never tried sushi. I just looked at it like, I don't think I'll like it, and never tried it. And it was probably, I don't know, 20 years ago when I finally tried it and fell in love. And I pretty much it's been a part of my diet like probably every other week for the last 20 years. I just love sushi. But you know, it seems like around here where we're at, and even some places in Florida where they get pretty fresh seafood, there seems to be a lot of good sushi, but not amazing sushi. And mm-hmm. so there's probably only two that I can recall we've ever ate at that I would be like, that's amazing sushi. So that's really good to know. So you highly recommend them for sushi, best sushi ever.
Highly recommend them. And honestly, like, I love sushi, but it's one of those things that I find to be kind of weird about going and traveling and ordering in different places, mm-hmm. because unless you have really great fish,
right,
there's a lot of bad sushi, I think, out
there.
Or I shouldn't say bad, but just really not fantastic sushi. Yeah. And when I eat not great sushi, all it does is leave me wanting really great sushi.
Sure.
So I kind of am picky about where we go for sushi. And this is a place that not only I'd go out of my way to go eat sushi there.
Wow. That's awesome. Mm, that sounds good. And
you know, Napa's got a lot of great restaurants, but also for foodies who like to go to the farmer's market. There's amazing farmer's market that's in downtown Napa. There's also the Oakville Grocery, which is one of the oldest grocery stores in the country. And you can go there and buy the most incredible things for an epic charcuterie board. It's just really, there's a lot going on with food there in addition to the wine scene that surrounds it.
I want to know when a cheese plate turned into a charcuterie board.
Right, I know. Whatever
when
happened,
did that happen?
We got a meat and cheese tray, and then we went to your daughter's house one day, and she's like, I have a charcuterie board. And I'm like,
what's a charcuterie board?
And then she whips out a meat and cheese tray. I'm like, that's a meat and cheese tray. And she's like, no, it's a charcuterie board. I'm like, no, it's meat
fancy,
and cheese.
Fancy.
I know.
But
somewhere along the way, it changed because charcuterie was always just the cured meats, right? Mm-hmm. And so you could have a charcuterie board that would have been prosciutto and salamis and capo and, you know, maybe some terrine of some sort. And then a cheese board was separate, but somewhere along the way, we started mixing meat and cheese, calling it all a charcuterie board, or as my friend likes to call it, a charcuterie board.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually easier to say, a charcuterie.
I mean, I feel like I just started hearing it within the last, say, 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I'm a hillbilly from Kentucky. It's always going to be a meat and cheese tray.
Right, exactly. I'm like, there's meat, there's cheese, there's a tray.
In fact, if I go into a fancy restaurant and I see the charcuterie or however charcuterie, now I've got myself confused. I'm going to say, give me the meat and cheese tray.
Meat and cheese tray for two.
There you
They'll
go.
They'll be like, huh? But anyway, all right, moving on to number nine.
Yeah, this is
McMinnville.
McMinnville, Oregon.
So I haven't heard of that.
It's about an hour southwest of Portland, correct?
It is, yes. And about an hour east of the coast of Oregon. So if you're going to visit the Oregon coast, or you're going to Portland to go check out something, it's well worth driving that hour, hour and a half to get into McMinnville.
And I understand that McMinnville is actually considered Oregon's wine country. It's kind of the heart of it. So I can imagine there's some great food surrounding that wine country there.
It is. And it's not only a great place for restaurants, McMinnville itself, but there are some surrounding towns. Like Newburgh is one of the other big towns that's part of that. But like in Napa, where you have a lot of great wine, you'll always find great food. If there's great wine, there will be great food to go with the great wine.
Oh, yeah.
So it is also the heart of a lot of other crops. So again, McMinnville has an amazing farmer's market, probably one of the best farmer's markets that I've been to. Downtown McMinnville, there was a great Spanish restaurant called La Rambla that had amazing traditional tapas and some not so traditional tapas to go with it. We just really, really enjoyed McMinnville. It's kind of what Napa used to be before Napa got as big as what it is. So McMinnville is a little bit like going back in time, but still being surrounded by wine country, which in and of itself is just so beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
The rows and rows of vines, and it's just a really pretty, pretty scene to be surrounded by.
So would you say this is a smaller little town? I mean, is this like a hidden gem that, because I've never heard of it, but we haven't spent much time with our RV out on the West Coast at all.
Well, now that you're going to be full time, you're going to be able to.
I know,
exactly.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So yes, McMinnville's definitely a much smaller town, smaller for sure than Napa. The wine business in Oregon is much smaller than the wine business in California, and McMinnville is really the epicenter of what is the Oregon wine business. That is a valley that's called Willamette Valley, and they're mostly known for their production of Pinot Noir, and they make world-class Pinot Noir in the Willamette Valley. And they've got really great food to go along with it. So, you know, you've got, because you're only an hour from the coast, you get a lot of really great seafood, including Dungeness crabs. So, you know, you can count on a lot of really good and fresh clams, mussels, crabs for seafood coming from the coast. And then you're in really the heart of farm country there in McMinnville. So you'll still see, even at the farmer's market, people who are farming cattle and sheep and bringing that to the market, in addition to all of the fresh vegetables that are coming from the area as well.
Oh, very that's really cool.
Yeah, I was. You said Willamette Valley, and I'm like, I think we featured that area, and we did back in issue 16. We had a writer that wrote about that whole area. So are you saying that this is Willamette Valley is kind of in the same area as McMinnville, or a little bit further south?
It is. McMinnville is within Willamette Valley.
Oh,
so
got
the valley is like Napa Valley is a huge valley that runs, I think, 26 miles or something. Actually, Napa is probably more than that. So Willamette Valley is a large valley that is the major growing area, and McMinnville is one town within the valley, and it's the kind of the center of the Willamette Valley and the center of the wine production. So it's probably the bigger town within, well, one of the bigger towns inside of Willamette Valley.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. So it's part of it. Or it is.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is.
Well, let's head across to the other side of the United States, kind of up north to Traverse City, Michigan. And so this is going to be a little bit different because it's still on water, like McMinnville is getting food from the ocean. Here you're going to get a lot of freshwater fish, correct? So food.
A lot of freshwater fish. So, and actually, you know, you think it's like all the way up north, right? But the 45th parallel, which is the like geographic parallel that runs through Oregon, is the same and kind of runs right by where Willamette Valley is the same parallel that runs through northern Michigan there.
Oh.
And northern Michigan, Traverse City, is also a pretty big wine producing area. It is the wine producing area for Michigan, is the Leelanau Peninsula or Old Mission Peninsula, both making some really high quality wines from there too. I'm a Michigan native, so I have to have a little Michigan love going.
Oh, yes.
And I'm guessing because of you living in Ohio that you've been up to Traverse City area.
We've not, I don't know if we've been in, I have not been, Randy might have been. We,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we have some connections in Upper Peninsula, Michigan. So we've been up there. Randy's been up there quite a bit, and I've been up there twice now. So we've been up that far.
Yeah, but we've not been to Traverse City.
Okay.
I mean, you see the on I-75, you do see the signs for it, but we've not been in there. We hear it's an amazing city. We've heard that from several people.
It is really the beautiful part of, if outside of the Upper Peninsula, which is awesome.
Oh, yes.
But the whole west side of Michigan, and particularly the northwest side, which is where Traverse City is just stunningly beautiful. You have the Lake Michigan, which is massive. I mean, you would think that you were on an ocean when you see Lake Michigan. And it is just really beautiful. You get a lot of people from Chicago, from Grand Rapids, which is a pretty big city in western Michigan, and from Detroit, who all go to Traverse City and the area surrounding Traverse in the summertime there's a lot of money, and there's a lot of great restaurants that are there to help people spend their money, you know, mm-hmm. and to enjoy their vacations. And more Traverse City now has become a year-round city. So you have a lot of infrastructure around it that didn't used to be there. And you're right, Kaylee, there is some amazing lake fish from whitefish, which is just a really, like, it is so basic and so
mild
without a ton of flavor, but right. the texture and the little bit of flavor that it has is so delicious and so sweet almost. And walleye, which is terrific, it's kind of a little bit meatier, and then fresh perch, which you don't always find in the Traverse City area. It comes more from smaller lakes, but you'll still find it on some menus up there that can be just really, really delicious.
So what are some of your restaurants that you visited in Traverse City?
Well, there's Amical, which is in downtown Traverse City, which I really like as a little traditional French bistro. Red Ginger, that's on the main street if you like Asian food. One of the really cool buildings that's in Traverse City is the Grand Traverse Commons, which is an old psychiatric hospital. And there's a couple of Italian restaurants that are inside of that building.
Oh, neat.
One is Trattoria Stella and one is Pepe Nero. And it's kind of cool to go there and to sit there and think, okay, this used to be like the basement of the psychiatric hospital.
Right.
Imagine the stories that these walls could tell you.
Oh my gosh.
Do have some little tours that they do of the building. It's now converted, like the whole area has been converted into a shopping, like a multi-use facility where they have living apartments and condos. My friend's parents actually live in one of the condos that's there. It's really just a nice, really nice place to be.
Oh, that's
cool. If you're looking for a sunset dinner, you can go to Glen Arbor, which is kind of on the very west side of, it's not in Traverse proper, but it's a neighboring town. There's a restaurant there called Blue, which has the most amazing, my screen timed out there, the most amazing, sunset and great, great dinner to go to there. Oh, I was just going to say that, again, you have a really amazing Traverse City farmers market, lots of roadside stands, because in addition to growing a lot of grapes for making wine, they're also the largest producer of cherries in the country, particularly tart cherries. So you have a lot of cherries. There's a lot of sweet cherries that are growing up there. And there's a lot of other crops. To go and to drive through the area in the springtime is really just an incredible time to be up there. It's a little early for season in terms of RVing, but there's so many trees in bloom, the cherries and the peaches and the apple trees. It's just gorgeous to be up there when all of those fruit trees are blooming.
Oh, I can imagine. So funny story with Randy and I and fruit and fruit picking. We were out in...
This is not funny.
This is totally... Well, it's sad. It was sad and tragic for me. We were out in Glacier National Park in the surrounding area there in Montana. And they have all these wonderful fruit picking farms, cherry trees and all kinds of fun stuff. Do you know how many of these farms that we went by that I begged and pleaded this man to let me go pick some fruit? And you know what his response was? No. No to picking the fruit.
Well, here was my thought. You know, we had a limited time and we drove 29 hours to get there and we were going to go experience Glacier National Park. And I'm like, we didn't come 29 miles, you know, 2,000 hours or 2,900
exactly.
miles, you know, $3,000 worth of fuel at $5 a gallon diesel to go pick cherries.
Why not? It would have made me happy.
We had some friends with us and they were giving me a hard time about it.
Because they wanted to pick fruit.
And so for like a week long, they give me a hard time and I'm like, fine, I just gave up. I'm like, fine, go pick your cherries. And they looked and they were closed for the season. So it was like
oh,
it was an argument for like 3 or 4 day period that it had no, it just didn't matter.
I know. know. It was so sad on so many levels.
But the one thing I wanted to say before Callie interrupted me is that Traverse City is kind of like in an inlet to Lake Michigan. And so there's this peninsula that kind of goes out there. And that's where kind of Glen Arbor and a few other towns are. And there's a lot of campgrounds on that peninsula. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You know, I'm looking on RV Life's campground reviews, and there's about 6 or 7 campgrounds right there on that peninsula that looks like you're on the water. I haven't been up there. I don't know for sure. Are you familiar with any of the campgrounds up there?
I'm familiar with some of them. I don't know how many are right on the water, but many of them have, they're close enough where you can drive to the local beach or whatever. There is, in Traverse City itself, there is a state campground that is directly across from the water. So it's really just a matter of going across the road to get to the beach that's right there. And there's some, you know, in Michigan, you're never more than 5 miles from a body of water. So even if you're not on the lake at Lake Michigan, you can probably find a campground that has some sort of water access, even if it's an inland lake. And there's tons of camping out there. My list is top 10 foodie destinations, particularly for RVers, because they're places that we've RV'd to and that, you know, you can go and you can camp there. We camped in downtown Napa Valley. We camped in McMinnville.
Oh, gotcha.
And you can camp in Traverse City proper. So it's really, you know, there's a lot of places I think that you cannot go and camp in.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear that I was wrong, but I'm pretty sure there's no RV camping on Manhattan.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it would cost.
Right.
Either.
Yeah.
Right. You got it.
So, you know, it's an awesome food city, but it's not particularly the easiest in terms of navigating as an RVer.
Okay.
Agreed. All right. Well, I'm excited about number 7 because this is Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, which is where you're going to find a lot of really good comfort food. Like one of my favorites in the world is barbecue. So I am excited to hear about if you hit up a barbecue place and what it was like.
You're not going to believe we didn't go for barbecue.
And that's it. We're ending the podcast here.
I know. But you know what? Here's the thing. And you guys are going to, you already know because you've been RVing for so long. Mm-hmm. But every time you go somewhere, it's impossible to do everything.
It really is.
And I get the biggest, every time we're getting ready to leave somewhere, I go through like a 2 or 3 day FOMO period.
Yes.
Where I'm like, but we can't leave because I haven't done this, or this yet, mm-hmm. or I haven't eaten at this place, or this place. So, and Brian always says to me, why do you do this to yourself? We can come back. Like, just because we're here doesn't mean that you do everything that you can do. Like, we need to leave some stuff on the list. So we
right. I'm glad you're sharing this because I had the same problem. Like,
we do.
And, you know, now that we're getting ready to go to full time, we've definitely already said we're going to spend at least a month in every location to give us plenty of time to, you know, get a feel for the area. But yeah, oftentimes in our trips of the past, it's been like, oh, wait, well, we just did a Wilmington podcast yesterday. And if you've been to Wilmington, you know, there's a big U.S. ship right out in the water that's kind of the main attraction mm-hmm. for Wilmington.
And
we didn't have time to go to see it. and so those things happen. Of course, we were only there for 4 days.
Yeah.
But those things happen. And you know, you got to have this paradigm shift in your brain saying that, I can come back.
But that's the hard part, too.
Yes, you can come back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you still need to live life. Like, you still need to take care of all the regular stuff that happens as part of life. So Brian's still working a very normal job. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Monday through Friday, you know, he's pretty much chained to the desk from all day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we camped next to you in Winchester, Tennessee, mm-hmm. and that's how we met Anne. We we happened to be camping right next to each other. We were down there. Callie's mother lives like 1 mile away from this park. We were staying at the park visiting her mother. Randomly ran into Ann. Turned out she was a writer, and then we started the conversation. But where I wanted to go with that is, we didn't meet your husband for like 4 days because he was in the RV working every day.
I was starting to question if you were really married.
But yeah, I really am married, and I really do have a husband that I live with.
Well, we did meet him, so we know he's legit. But in fact, I think we had to meet him at 6 o'clock p.m. because of all his conference calls. I know he's on the phone most of the day. So, but I think a lot of full time RVers like that too. So I don't think that's too unnormal for full timers.
Okay, so you didn't get barbecue in Oklahoma. So
we didn't get barbecue.
What did you get?
Well, we had chicken fried steak, which is not at the top of my bucket list of things to eat, and I'd never honestly had it before, but I had it there because that is Oklahoma true, like, that's where that dish was born. So we went to a place called Cheever's Cafe that had chicken fried steak on the menu. You are in the heart of cattle country, so there is a lot of beef that's there. And we didn't have barbecue, but we did have a steak out at one of the restaurants in the stockyards.
That would be delicious.
Gordon Ramsay just opened a restaurant in downtown Oklahoma City, which is like, there's some celebrity chefs that are getting online with Oklahoma City. Cause there's a lot of interesting things that are going on there, honestly.
Interesting.
Yeah. We talked earlier about our disappointment in one of the James Beard Award winners that we both were bummed about in Asheville. But I'll tell you, there is another a Laotian place in Oklahoma City called Ma De Lao, which had the most amazing food, this crispy rice salad that, if all salad tasted this good, we'd all eat salad every day, all day long, because this was like the salad of all salads, with super crispy rice and lots of fresh herbs in it. It was just delicious.
Oh, wow.
So you have a lot of really traditional Southern food, chicken fried steak, barbecue, and then you've got a lot of ethnic food because you have a lot of farmers that are there, and so you have a lot of interesting Asian food and a lot of Mexican food. So it's really interesting, a lot of diversity from really inexpensive food to very expensive food. And we didn't make it to Gordon Ramsay's place. It was just opening, I think, the week or two before we left there, so we didn't get to go, but one of these days we'll have to go back. And it's a really, interesting city to be in.
Yeah.
I think the Midwest kind of gets overlooked a lot. And I think there's a lot to be said about being at restaurants where you have food that's coming from that area, right? So just seems like if you have food being grown or cattle being raised, that the opportunity for having things that are fresher is there. And so the Midwest, I think, gets overlooked, but I think there's a lot of great food that comes from the area.
I would agree. You know, we spent some time in Amarillo, Texas, which ended up having an amazing, amazing food scene, which was really surprising to us. But I think it goes back to what you were saying is, you know, there's a lot of stockyards in the area. So there's a lot of beef there, and there's a lot of Mexican influence. So there was some of the best Mexican food we'd ever had in our life. And so I agree that I think that part of the United States is much overlooked. People are like, what are you going to find in Oklahoma City? But then
I had no idea what to expect. My expectations actually were really quite low. I had shoulder surgery when we were in Oklahoma City, so I just was really going because there was a doctor there who was going to do my surgery, and I didn't really know what to expect at all for food, and I was very pleasantly surprised. We will go back to explore more while we were there. And I promise you, Kaylee, I'll get barbecue.
Okay, good, good. Because I will be really upset if you don't.
Yeah, you gotta give us a full report.
That's right. It'll be part two of the foodie tour. All right, moving on to number six is Madison, Wisconsin, which is kind of another surprising location. But, you know, again, you're there by a bunch of water up in Wisconsin. I understand they have a lot of farm-to-table dining experiences and a bunch of farmers markets. So, and of course, the cheese. So tell us some of your favorite eats there in Madison.
Well, you talk about the cheese, and these people are totally cheeseheads to a core. I mean, it's not like a little bit of cheese. It's like a lot of cheese.
Oh, yeah. And Wisconsin cheese is so good.
It can be really good. There's some that's kind of not so great, I think, too.
Yeah.
I am confident in telling you that I don't need to eat another fried cheese curd for a long time.
I agree with you on that.
They actually have a cheese curd trail, which is supposed to be the top restaurants in the area that have the best cheese curds. So for those people who are really into fried cheese curds, Madison could be the place for you to go.
Oh, nice.
As a university town, I think that they offer a really wide range of foods. So also really a popular area for farmers for growing fruits and vegetables. But Madison also is the home to the University of Wisconsin. And so you have a lot of diversity in ethnicities. And you can find a lot of different ethnic choices for foods because of that.
You know, we should also mention that you wrote a wonderful article about munching your way through Madison, Wisconsin for the next issue that's getting ready to be released. I didn't want to forget that. I didn't mean to interrupt you. And again, in typical format with Anne, the pictures are amazing. The write-up is incredible. And so we're excited to get this out in everybody's hands here real soon.
One of my things that I loved really about Madison was that they have this county park that is in the center of Madison. And I'm telling you, it is one of the nicest parks that we have stayed in. We had a huge RV site. You were 5 seconds to get to the bike trail that connects you to downtown Madison and riding around their lakes that are there. An awesome dog park that was acres and acres of walking trails where you could have the dog off leash.
Oh, nice.
So it was an amazing place to stay, and you had all of these great restaurants that were right there. Of course, you've got a really great beer scene as well, and you know, all of the farmers markets that are part of that area as well. Downtown Madison has the largest farmers market in the country.
Oh, wow.
And it's right in downtown, and it's right on the square around their Capitol building. So it's a really picturesque place. I got up and went early in the morning and walked the whole square. And by the time I left, it was so crowded, I couldn't even believe how thick the crowds were just to walk through to buy vegetables and just to experience the farmers market, you know, with the street entertainers and everything, but with the Capitol building in the background, which was awesome.
Oh, that's incredible. That's really interesting. Again, I never would have thought that one of the largest farmers markets in the United States is located there.
It is.
Yeah.
And right across the street from the farmers market is the best cheese shop, one of the best cheese shops I've ever been to in the country. It's called fromagination. So if you think of the French word fromage and then imagination kind of blended together, this cheese shop really features the best cheeses of Wisconsin. And I'm not talking about your basic, you know,
squeaky cheese,
cheddar cheese, whatever. The squeakier, the better for right. your cheese curds,
right.
apparently.
Right.
This is like seriously top quality farmed you know, fresh milk that's used for aged cheeses that are specialty, a really, really incredible store that not only provides an opportunity for you to buy the best cheeses that Wisconsin makes under one roof, but will also educate you about cheese in general and help you make a really, really great, ready for it, Randy?
Yep.
Charcuterie board.
Ooh, I like
there
it.
You go. A cheese tray.
I like those charcuterie.
Cheese and meat trays.
Yes. Cheese and meat trays.
Right, right. So, well, that sounds incredible. Yeah, I've been in Madison. I haven't spent a lot of time there. We do go up to Wisconsin every year. We've got some business up there. We've got to tend to every couple. We go up more towards the Eau Claire area. But it's funny because they all have the accent, and we didn't know about the squeakiness until we met with our guy up there. And, you know, he's like, oh, don't you know?
Don't kind you of know guy. You don't, get the squeak in the cheese?
Don't you know you get these squeaky, you betcha.
You betcha you get
you betcha
squeaky.
Is the other one. Yeah. You betcha. You betcha you go out there and you get that squeaky cheese. Because we didn't know that. You know, we were typical, you know, people that go up there and, like, you pick up cheese, like, oh, that's good. And he's like, no, if you have squeaking, if he's it's like squeaky, this, it's fresh.
Yes.
So I guess it loses
the
its...
The best cheese curds are squeaky because that is a sign of freshness.
Right,
so,
right. We didn't know that until a few years ago, but yeah. Very true. Hey, babe, you remember that time that we were driving around the little guy, that teardrop camper, when we first started camping, and I forgot to put the tongue jack up?
Oh, I do, and we hit a nice little pot size hole, and woo, that tongue jack was mangled up.
Yeah, you remember how hard it was for us to find what we felt like was a quality jack? We kept seeing some really cheap ones, and we just could not find the right jack. It would have been great to have known about this company, this next company we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so UltraFab, they are a manufacturer in the RV jack leveling and stabilization world. And they handle everything around those types of products. And they offer really, really quality products. They've been in the industry, in the RV industry, since the 70s.
Yeah, I think they've been around since like 1958, but they've been servicing the RV industry since the 70s. So now, don't they have a great warranty too?
Yes, we're talking like 5 to 10 years on some of their products, depending on what you're getting.
And that's pretty amazing because I think the ones we were seeing were like 1 year or something like that.
Absolutely. So if you're in the hunt for any type of RV jack or leveling or stabilization products for your camper trailer or fifth wheel, UltraFab is the company you want to check out. You can buy directly off their website or find a dealer that they offer their products through. Their website is ultra-fab.com. Be sure to get out there today and check out their products, ultra-fab.com. I'm excited about the next five because we have been to all of these locations, and minus number two, we have ate our way through a lot of these towns. And number five is Nashville, Tennessee. And Nashville is known for their hot chicken. So did you experience the hot chicken there? And if you did, whose did you have?
Yes, of course. We had to experience the hot chicken. Oh. So we went to two places. And we've been to Nashville. I should say we've been to Nashville a few different times. It's sort of it's an easy place to stay. Mm-hmm. That's the middle of the country when you're traveling. So anyway, we've been to Nashville a few times. We have been to both Prince's Fried Chicken, which is kind of the original, one of the top rated places.
Right.
And then we've also been to Hattie B's.
Okay.
Okay.
We've heard of that one too. Prince's is definitely where it all started, is my understanding from reading the history there. And Prince's, they have multiple locations through Nashville.
Several.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they have maybe, and I'm guessing, but I'm around 4 or 5 locations. And I think Hattie B's has 2. And then the other place that's on my list for the next time we go back is a place called Party Fowl.
Oh, I've not heard of that.
And it's F-O-W-L, so fowl, like a chicken would be fowl.
Okay.
But that's on my list of places to go the next time that we're back. You can't eat too much hot fried chicken in one stop because otherwise you have bigger problems to deal with than just how hot it is.
Amen,
right?
Sister. Amen. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So one hot chicken dinner per visit is about
The max?
My max out, yeah.
The clump max.
The clump max.
That is.
That's awesome. Now,
but I mean, you're talking about a town that's really about Southern food, right?
Sure.
So, yes.
A great restaurant that we really loved for brunch is right downtown called Biscuit Love, because how can you be in the South without having biscuits?
Right, exactly.
And where's Henrietta Red, which is a James Beard Award winner. That was a fantastic dinner that we had downtown Nashville. Really, really tasty. And of course, you've got, as we talked about before we started recording, just the Tennessee whiskey scene. So you've got a lot of really high quality whiskey that's coming from the area. And when you've got whiskey, you've got great food to go with that too, mm-hmm. right? So you've got really good barbecue and you know, hearty foods that will hold up to bourbon and whiskey.
We also want to give a shout out to a Cincinnati company down there called Jeff Ruby's. That's mm-hmm. one of our favorite steakhouses. If you're familiar with Cincinnati, Jeff Ruby is a large part of Cincinnati. Yeah. And they opened up a location just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. We went there 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
It's been longer than a few years. It's been there for probably about 10, 15 years now.
No, it hasn't. Has it been that long?
Yeah, okay. Because I went there several times back in the corporate America days.
Okay. Anyway, this is a swanky place. Well, it's swank in the sense that the food's amazing. It's very, very pricey. Mm-hmm. You can actually show up in jeans. You don't have to dress up or anything like that. I think a lot of restaurants are getting away from that, requiring a jacket and stuff. But Jeff Ruby's has amazing steak, the best filet you'll ever have, and lobsters.
And I've yet to find a better steak anywhere else in the United States that we've ate. There was one place that came close, and that's in one of the locations that we're talking about.
Yeah, so we've got a fun. We're way over on time here today, but okay. I got to tell the story. So we go to Nashville most every year, not every year, to go to the CMA Fest, and we just really have a blast. We get tickets to go down to Nissan Stadium, see all the big acts. You know, that starts on like a Thursday and goes all the way through Sunday night. And one day we decided to go to Ruby's prior to the concerts. So we went in there and they got us in. We're like, hey, we're native Cincinnatians. You should let us in because we're important, because we're from Cincinnati.
We're from Cincinnati.
We know Jeff Ruby. We really don't. But we used any line we could to get in because we had no reservations. They let us in. We had a couple appetizers and one steak and lots of drinks.
Lots of drinks.
And so we get the bill and it was $600 for the two of us.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. This is a true story. It was $600.
Well, you got that like the raw seafood tower.
Yeah, I got the raw seafood tower.
And that's going to do it every time.
Well, yeah, I think that was like $150. But then we had sushi. We had they had lobster bisque soup, which was amazing. But then we've got our belly full. We're $600 broker. broker, if that's a word.
Broker.
and now we're kind of a little bit late for the concert because we had a hard time getting our bill. And so now we're like, how are we going to, you know, it's only like 2 miles, but we can book it. Lo and behold, one of the
rickshaw
comes by. We're like, hey, and we flag this rickshaw down. We jump on the rickshaw, and he takes it. Now again, we are pretty happy. We're about five drinks into the night. Big old steak sitting in our belly, and so we go down the hill and just make it for the first act to open up. Yeah. But it was an amazing night. But Nashville is such a great town; it really is.
It is. So many
good seats.
Yes, and we love the hot dogs. Like, if you go to Printer's Alley, you can't go wrong with getting a hot dog in Printer's Alley after a great night out. And maybe it's the great night out that makes the hot dog so great. I haven't figured that out, but they're pretty delicious. Yeah,
we've never tried it sober, so we can't confirm that they're really great, but they taste great after a night of drinking.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yes.
Good to know.
So now moving on to the next one is probably my favorite on this whole list. You want to introduce it?
New Orleans. I mean, come on.
Yes.
There are so... This is a town that you could spend a lifetime trying a new place every day. You know, there's just many great, and you've got the French inspiration, the Creole inspiration.
I would literally be 100 pounds heavier if we lived in that area. I mean, we've heard about the char grilled oysters. I never had tried them until this last time we were there a couple years ago. And Oh my gosh.
They're incredible.
And nobody outside of New Orleans does it like New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody. We just had them a few weeks ago at a restaurant. And I don't even remember where we were, but it was nowhere near as good as what you get down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of your favorites?
Where did you go? Do you remember where you ordered those?
I am looking it up right now because
it was right across from the beignet shop, the one downtown.
From Café Du Monde?
Yeah.
From Café Du Monde.
But it was right directly across.
Here it is. It was the original French Market. The original French Market restaurant and bar. We literally decided we were just going to smell our way to food, and we did. We landed on this place, and it ended up being the best. I mean, the char-grilled oysters were just outstanding. We ended up ordering them, like two orders. They were so good.
Well, we had just we had just come off.
We did the same thing. Different place, but the same thing where we ordered the oysters as our starter and, drinks and a thing of the char grilled oysters at Drago's restaurant, and when we came time to order dinner, we just ordered another thing of oysters because we just wanted more.
They're so good. We had just come off of a fitness competition, Callie and I both, mm-hmm. and we went to New Orleans, and I kid you not, I gained 20 pounds in 4 days in New Orleans.
Oh, the beignets.
It was the beignets.
So many beignets.
It was the oysters. It was the green grenades, whatever those things are called, grenade.
The hurricane.
Hurricane. No, I think it was a grenade.
I don't know.
Hurricane's like the famous one, but there might be a green grenade. They got a lot of fancy drinks going in New Orleans.
Yes,
right?
They do.
Yes. So the hurricane was the one we didn't like. It was too sweet. Remember, that was when we did the tour, but it was the green grenade. Remember, it came in the long green.
Uh-huh. And we still have those downstairs in the basement.
Right. Oh my gosh. I'm telling you, all the listeners out there, if you've not been to New Orleans,
go
just for the food because, the French Quarter is really cool, but the reason you go is either for the music or for the food or for both. And you've got to experience once. Now, I'll be the first to admit, you don't want to step outside of the French Quarter. It's a pretty rough town.
It
really, really is.
But
staying in the French Quarter, and correct me, Anne, if you feel differently, but staying in the French Quarter, you're relatively safe. They do have police officers roaming the street and stuff like that. But the French Quarter is just such a neat experience with the food and the music and everything.
Yeah, I would say if you're downtown, like at night, I wouldn't leave the French Quarter.
Yeah.
But if you're downtown during the day, I think you can go to some other places and not be. I think you could be okay.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. So what were some of
your... Did you stay downtown? Did you stay at the French Quarter RV Resort?
No, we didn't.
We looked at that one, but we ended up staying out on the river.
Just probably 5 miles away from there.
What's the name of the place?
Okay.
It was a beautiful resort. I can't recall it, but it's right on the river.
It's okay. That French Quarter RV Resort, I would highly recommend because you are right there. So you can walk. Like what we did was we would walk to the French Quarter before it got dark, and then we would Uber back at the end of the night. So you could go and be there, and it was so close to getting a quick and inexpensive Uber ride to get back. And it was great. So
now, isn't it? It's right there in the heart of the French Quarter. It's like right
it
on the
is.
Tip, and it's really
right there.
Isn't it really tight too? It's a really small park.
It's a small park, but the spaces are not terrible.
Okay.
In terms of how much space you have, not for a city park at all, and there's plenty of space to walk around. You know, I took the dog. Our dog, I walk him every single morning. That's how you and I met, Randy. Mm-hmm. And we walked all the way down to the river and through the French Quarter and back a few different days. There's another local park that's pretty close by that made for a fun walk one morning to see a bunch of the sculptures and stuff that are there. So it's a really neat place to be able to park and to be that close to the city, which is part of what I thought was so cool about being right there in the heart of it all. And, you know, a $5 Uber ride away from the French Quarter is pretty fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
The music's just so incredible. So I got a funny story. I'm going to call out Calla here.
What?
So, I'm going to tell the story.
I don't even know what story it is.
We were listening to this lady who had an amazing voice. She really had kind of an Adele-ish voice. And I've been playing guitar since I was 12, so I'm very much into music. Can't sing worth a damn, but I enjoy listening to music, and I can recognize good talent when I see it. So, anyway, Callie and I are watching this lady. Callie goes to the bathroom, and I walk up and start talking to this lady. She comes down to take a break, and I'm talking to her, just about like what songs she can do. I was kind of trying to find, you know, a couple different songs I would like her to sing, because I thought she had a very much like an Adele voice. Callie walks out and sees me talking to this lady. Now, she doesn't make the connection that it's the performer, and she thinks I'm just randomly talking to a lady, and she comes up and she gives me the evil eye.
Oh, I did. I gave you the stare down.
And I was like, what are you looking at me like that for? And anyway, so she doesn't make a scene, but she waits until I get back to the table. She's like, I can't believe I'm gone for 1 minute and you're already flirting with women.
True story.
And I'm like, what? She's like, I can't believe you were just talking to that girl. I'm like, that was the lady who was performing. I was asking her if she knew a song. And so there's no real point to the story
other than I got yelled at for
talking to the entertainment.
It is. Yeah, very true. Very true.
But let's
move back to, okay, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the music there is,
you know,
Nashville in my mind is probably the best. You know, people talk about Austin, they talk about all these other places. I still think Nashville is number one as far as talent goes, as far as great bands and artists and all that. But I would argue that New Orleans gets a fair share of really, really talented art, bands and stuff that plays there in the French Quarter. So
I would agree. And, you know, we wrote all about New Orleans in issue 11. So if you go back to issue 11, if you have access to those back issues, I encourage you to get out there, because there's just a lot of great information of different things to see and do outside of the French Quarter also, which is a really neat experience. On top of the food, we talk about some of the food in there too.
Yep, and you found these places that we stayed at, right?
Yes. It is the New Orleans RV Resort and Marina.
Right. And they're not paying us to plug them. It was just, we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We did see the one that Anne was speaking about here, that's right in the French Quarter. I don't remember why we didn't stay there, but we didn't this time. One other time we tried to get in there, we couldn't get in there.
It might have been that. Yeah, I think it was kind of a last minute trip.
Yeah, we added it on. But
okay. Well, let's get on to our next location, because Las Vegas, Nevada at number 3.
Vegas, baby, Vegas.
Oh my goodness, there is some great food there. So tell us some of your favorite experiences in Las Vegas.
Oh my gosh, you have so many celebrity chefs with restaurants around Vegas that you could go for months, I think, and just eat in the celebrity places. But we ate at David Chang's Momofuku, which I'm waiting for Randy to say, because I can't wait for him to try to pronounce Momofuku.
Please, honey, try.
Maybe you don't want to do that while we're on air.
Momofuku.
Maybe we should do that. Oh, that was pretty good.
So if you, I can repeat the sounds I hear. I'm good at that.
No, you're not.
I'm just not good at looking at the spelling and trying to, you know, because in high school, I didn't go through Spanish or French or anything like that. I barely conquered English. And so I don't know how to put the, you know, I'll pronounce something and Callie would be like, honey, this is Spanish. You don't say the E, you pronounce the I like, ugh, or something like that. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But it becomes comical.
It is. And
I get it.
Before we even started.
I love listening to you guys, because it's an ongoing thing with Randy's pronunciation and Kelly, you're correcting him.
I know I'm coming off as uneducated and a hillbilly.
You're a very smart man. You just can't speak.
I know. I just, I suffer, you know, those out there that are listening, I know there's somebody out here that suffers from this too. My brain is like 9 steps ahead of my mouth. And so I'll have these gaffes where I'm just like, I got a lot of, and can't get it out because my mind's got to come back to what my mouth's saying and correct it. And so that happens all the time because my mind is like firing at, you know, Mach 5.
I actually have a Randy to English translator that I use.
Yeah, she gets me. But anyway, let's go back to Vegas.
Back to Vegas.
Yeah, so the David Chang's Momofuku was the place that we ate at most recently that really wowed us. Again, it was this crispy rice dish that, you know, when you change, like, I think we all have this experience of rice where it's sort of just this mushy thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe is oversteamed, or it's just like that really basic white rice that you get with your Chinese takeout. But rice can be so diverse. And when you change that crispiness, like that texturally, so you get that kind of firm center, but the soft outside, and then you add this crispiness to it, it's just incredible. So he had a dish on his menu that was with duck, and then it was in this crazy sauce. I mean, the whole thing was just so delicious, and the crispiness of that rice, so perfect. And then, you know, you have all those places that are on the strip there, but even when you get off the strip, there's so many other restaurants. And I think part of it is because you have a lot of people working, you know, in the restaurant business who want to eat out when they're not working. So right. You've got some of the best Thai food that I've ever had was at this restaurant called Lotus of Siam. I think also a James Beard Award winner. The food there was so good and just so much flavor. We often will go out for food that I don't cook at home, right? So
right.
It's a lot of Thai or Asian or Indian because they're things that I'm not as familiar with for being able to cook at home. Mm-hmm. And Thai food is one of those. And this was just amazing Thai food.
So we have a really fun experience. So when I was years ago, this was BC before Cali. Mm-hmm. I took my ex-wife down to this Callie's probably really wondering where I'm going with this, but there was this really kind of romantic, kind of little bit sexually charged restaurant that was just a really cool experience. You know, nothing crazy or anything like that in Miami that we went to, and just really had a good time. And so when we were in Vegas, I tried to look for, you know, something similar, and I ran across the Strip House. And when I looked at it, it's like this sexual, you know, not sexual, I'm using the wrong word.
Yeah, you are.
But sexy, maybe that's the word they use, steakhouse. And so I'm like, cool. So I booked it. And first of all, the food was
phenomenal.
But, really good.
Yeah, and I walked in concerned. I was like, look, I don't want a bunch of chicks walking around in thong bikinis and topless serving my food. This is not what I'm looking for. And it's actually, it's very, very tasteful. Very, very beautifully done. Because all the pictures on the wall are of all these old starlets.
Like 1930s. From like the 30s and 20s, 20s
and
right.
40s. You know, when it was very beautiful and tasteful.
Well, it was like the, like kind of like the Marilyn Monroe, the skirt kind of blows right. up. You see a little
or
bit of
or maybe somebody showed a shoulder, you right, know, right. or an ankle.
But none of the staff dressed anything like
no,
that.
No, they wore just normal clothes. Thank you, Jesus.
But it was kind of funny because I had something completely different in mind, but it turned out to be a great experience because the food, I think they had a restaurant in New York and Vegas. Those
they
are the only
do,
two.
Yes. And that is the place that the steak that we had there rivaled Jeff Ruby's. And I am a huge red meat eater, and I eat red meat a lot. So I've had a lot of steak in my life. And so to keep going back to Jeff Ruby's is one of the best in my life that I've ever had. Strip House was right there with it. I was impressed.
We ordered, and they brought out a whole thing and carved it right there.
We did the whole porterhouse.
Porterhouse, that's what it was. And they brought it to our table.
And carved it in front of us.
And we had a ton of steak left over that we took home with us, or took back to the RV. Mm-hmm.
It was delicious.
So what are some of the places, some of the other places that you ate at that you really enjoyed?
There are so many that there was that Lotus of Siam. I'm trying to remember. There was another Thai place that we ate at. There were a bunch of little places that we checked out that were right off of Fremont Street. We stayed one time that we went, we stayed at the Main Street Casino, which is kind of a weird sort of, I wouldn't go there if I had children, and I would be careful walking around there at night, particularly by myself. But you're within just like a 3 blocks from the Fremont Street Experience, so you have really great access to the crazy part of Old Town Las Vegas. And there's some little places that are down there that are really, really good. There's so many places, and when you go to any of the major casinos that are on the Strip, pretty much if they are making it to be able to be open on the Strip, they're an amazing restaurant that's there. Those casinos don't allow people who are not at the top of their game to be part of their operation, and they don't allow them to stay open if they're not performing at their top. Yeah, so
I kind of look at Vegas kind of very similar to New York in the sense that you can pretty much pull into any restaurant and you're going to have an amazing experience. Yeah. We go to the city quite, I wouldn't say frequently, but every few years we go to the city. We enjoy the city, although it's getting a little bit more crazy in the city. Last time we saw a lot of things that were just shocking to us, but it's kind of like almost any restaurant that you pull in and you sit up and you get reservations, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
In Vegas is very much like that. Yeah. Like pretty much all the restaurants, like you said, it's such a competitive market. If you're not good, you will close your doors quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's good for the consumer.
Such a competitive market.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely. So we're going to go on to number two, which is really cool. We've been there, but we didn't get to really eat there, which is San Antonio, Texas. Now, I see on the list again, and we're going to have a little talk about this, barbecue joints. Did you get barbecue in San Antonio?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's talk about that.
Well, so I'll be honest, we drove for barbecue from San Antonio because you're really close to where you have some of the best barbecue towns, like whole towns that are really known for barbecue. And of course, do you think that I have this in my head? No, I don't.
It is.
We made one trip. We made one day trip out. Maybe Randy can Google this for us since I know he's really good at that, but it's the town that is like the capital of barbecue for Texas. And it's a day drive from Lockhart. It just came to me, when you give something up, Lockhart, Texas is a short drive from San Antonio and you have some of the best barbecue restaurants that are right there. So we spent one day, we went and picked up a little bit of barbecue. And when I say a little bit, at the end of the day, I think we ate an entire week's worth of, we had an entire week's worth of food.
Wow.
We tasted a little bit that day, and then we packed it all up and took it home. And I think we ate a little bit of barbecue, a few other meals for sure for the rest of that week because we had so many leftovers. But we wanted to taste the different styles of how it is. And Texas barbecue, barbecue around the country is different.
Oh, yeah.
We really don't like Memphis barbecue. It's too saucy for us.
Right.
They try to make barbecue out of everything. Mm-hmm. I wrote an article about Memphis barbecue for someone else, and I'm still sort of reeling from the experience because it was just too much barbecue. Like, we still sort of quiver a little bit every time we think about eating more barbecue because we're just not really sure. But Texas barbecue is not with sauce usually. Mm-hmm. It's
dry rub. You're talking
very
about
dry rub, gotcha. Low and slow cooked. A lot of the not as smoky as what some can be.
Yeah,
it's a lot of beef, not a lot of pork. That was the other thing about Memphis, was it was pretty much all pork. So anyway, we love Texas barbecue, and you can get some really, really great barbecue very close to San Antonio. I'm sure you can get great barbecue in the city too. But honestly, the thing that we will keep going back to San Antonio for, and this is kind of crazy to admit how much I love this because my mouth is watering just thinking about mm-hmm. it right now, and I'm only about an hour away from it, so I might have to go while we're here in Fredericksburg. It is a chicken that is from this little restaurant called Pollos Asados Los Norteños. They have two locations. It's a Mexican style charred char grilled chicken.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you can find char grilled chicken that's Mexican style char grilled chicken all over the place. They have restaurants called El Pollo Loco that you've probably seen in your travels. Mm-hmm. It's like a big chain of char grilled chicken. Well, no one does this char grilled chicken like this Pollos Asados Los Norteños does. And the marinade or whatever they put in it must have some sort of crack or some addictive quality to it, because it is so good. You really have to just go. And it's nothing more than just a chicken. It comes, you know, mm-hmm. if you want to get it as a meal, it comes with charro beans and rice on the side mm-hmm. and tortillas. And a green salsa that is made from just blending, I think, a bunch of chili peppers with maybe a little bit of avocado or something to give it a creaminess and lime. And it is so good with this chicken that, yeah, I'm going to go have to get that.
You're talking to yourself into it.
Right.
So tell me the name of the restaurant again, because this is one I might struggle to pronounce, but tell me what that is again.
It's Pollos, which is the Spanish word for chicken. So Pollos. Asados, which is the Spanish word for
grilling.
Grilled.
Right? Okay.
And then Los Norteños is the name of the region of Mexico, I believe. So the whole name of the restaurant is Pollos Asados Los Norteños.
I am literally sticking that into Google Maps right now and saving it to go there.
Yeah, and if you can't find it, let me know. I'll be happy to send it. I've referred a lot of people to them. I'm not on an affiliate payout program, but I probably should at least be working for a free chicken.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it's not expensive. It's like, you know, I will tell you that I bought a raw chicken at the Nashville Farmers Market. This is one of my funny food stories, but I bought a raw chicken at the Nashville Farmers Market. It cost me over $45, and it was raw, and I still had to cook it.
Mm-hmm.
That was not at the Nashville. That was at the Napa Farmers Market. You can buy a whole chicken dinner that will feed you for four meals. With all the sides and the tortillas and the green salsa, it's like under $20.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really screaming great deal. It might as well be Callie, F-R-E-E.
Amen, sister.
I know how you like that. And there's not a lot of free when it comes to being a foodie. So you've got you really have to go. And it can't be that bad for you, right? Because it's just chicken.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. It's just char-grilled chicken.
Yummy.
And it's not even fried. So San Antonio is really unique because it is one of the UNESCO World Creative Cities of Gastronomy. So named as one of the two cities in the USA by UNESCO as a creative city of gastronomy. So you have a lot of local heritage traditions within their culinary scene. And it's how they take what is native and blend it with what is new to be kind of this unique style of cuisine, which is San Antonio.
That sounds incredible.
So you have the pollos asados, you have puffy tacos, which are really popular in San Antonio. Henry's puffy tacos are fantastic. There's a pork sandwich from this place called Rojo Pork and Bread. That's a traditional Mexican sandwich called a torta ahogado. Mm. And this sandwich is killer with the salsa that you dip it in, and just delicious.
Oh, it sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's like 12:30 here on Eastern
time.
And
my stomach is literally growling now.
Talk to me more, baby. Talk to me more.
I will, because we've got one more.
Right.
Leave me in, baby.
So, and now, the number one place, the number one city for foodies, give us a drum roll, is Tucson, Arizona. Yes.
Oh, and I just have to say, okay, Sonoran hot dogs. I feel like I could do a mic drop with a Sonoran hot dog, round out the list, and be like, ta-da, that's it. Those things are incredible.
Great talking to you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
This was a great show.
No, they were so good. So we heard a lot about them before we got there, so we knew we had to try the Sonoran hot dogs. But these are in Callie loves hot dogs, as she already told you about Printer's Alley in Nashville. But it was really good.
Oh, it was delicious. Delicious.
And I'm not typically a hot dog girl. I like when you talk about the Printer Row hot dog, I'm like, I'll send Brian.
Yeah.
I'm a hot dog off the grill once a year on July 4th or something.
Gotcha.
Like, woohoo,
but
I did
the
it.
Sonoran dogs in Tucson, it's a whole different story. They are really good.
They are. Did you have one place in particular that you ate them at that were just like, oh yes?
Well, we went to El Guero Canelo, which is kind of the place that's sort of the best known for. They have a couple of different locations. He was a baseball player turned restaurateur with his Sonoran hot dogs. He started really as just a food truck, you know, Roach Coach kind of production. And he now, I think, has three or four different locations of El Guero Canelo around town.
Oh, wow.
So I would definitely recommend checking them out. They have one option where, and this was what was recommended to us to get, I think, by someone who was working there. He told us to get the double. So it's two hot dogs, both of them wrapped in the bacon, as a Sonoran hot dog should be, and then slow roasted on their griddle. I think they cook it on a griddle. So it's two of those in one bun with the beans and all of that. So,
wow.
And it was pretty killer in probably more ways than one, right?
Keep talking dirty to me, Ann.
Right, I know, exactly. This is food porn to the nth degree.
And we absolutely, well, I don't want to say we because I want Callie to speak for her own, but I love Tucson. I just love the vibe. I love the people. I love the area. I love the culture. I love everything about Tucson.
Then we learned about these gigantic cookies from Gwendolyn Call that we totally missed out on when we were there. So now we have to go back, get the gigantic cookie, and eat more Sonoran hot dogs.
You know, I listened to that podcast with Gwendolyn, and I heard about the cookie. And I didn't know about that either, so I guess we all have to go back to Tucson.
We should do a meetup there. We should have Gwendolyn and you and us, and let's do a big meetup and have cookies and hot dogs.
Yeah,
I'm in.
So I was trying to think back to like some of the places we ate, and one thing that we noticed is, you know, when you get out west, you know, in Arizona, New Mexico, stuff like that, the Mexican's a lot different than the Midwest.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
there's you don't get all these cheese sauces. It's actually healthy Mexican food.
It is.
And it has probably more of a Spanish flair than really a Mexican flair. And so you get these dishes that are amazing. They're exploding with flavor. You don't have all the fattening cheese on. In fact, we were at one Remember we went to the Juan and I was craving cheese and I asked them if they had, you know, they brought out salsa and chips and I said, do you have a bowl of cheese? And I said, no. I mean, they told me no, like you can't, no quesadilla. No, no.
No queso, honey.
Or queso. Sorry. Thank you. Queso. No queso. And I was actually shocked that they didn't have queso to dip your chips in. But anyway, but it's healthy. It's good stuff.
Yeah, Sonoran Mexican is really delicious. And there's so much flavor that's built from all of the different chili peppers and stuff that they are grilling and making their salsas with. And that is what I really love the most about Tucson. It's not expensive place to go and to eat. You can spend a lot of money if you want going out to eat in Tucson, but you don't have to get great food. And, you know, there's the best bakery in the country that I found is this bakery called Barrio Breads that's right in downtown. It's not downtown, sorry. It's off a little bit from there. But they're one of the best bakers in the country. And they're using a lot of heritage grains. Tucson is the other UNESCO recognized creative cities of gastronomy, and I think well deserved, because they're really working on trying to keep some of the heritage grains and heritage foods going. So you'll find things like green corn chili or green corn tamales, which is using heritage green corn to make their tamales. Their heritage grains for the use of the breads from Barrio Breads. We ate in a really top restaurant that we ate at, and we went there a couple times because we just loved it so much, but it's a restaurant called Tito and Pep. And the chef there was named as the best chef in the Southwest by James Beard.
Oh, wow.
And he's so good, but he's using a lot of local ingredients and local heritage ingredients for the production of his food, and really, really exceptional place. And again, it's a university town, so you've got a lot of different, yes, there's a lot of Mexican food there, but there's other food as well. That's really, really fantastic and not super expensive.
Yep. No, absolutely. So we were there on our anniversary one time, and I'll tell this quick story. I know we're way over on time, but I think this is all good stuff for the listeners. And so definitely Tucson's definitely one of my favorite, along with New Orleans. But we were there on our anniversary, and we're like, let's just go find some good food. And honestly, every place is good that
every
we went
place.
To, but we found this. I'm like, I want Mexican food. We're out here. I just want it. And she found, Callie found this restaurant that was in the backside of a strip plaza.
Yeah, like a, I don't want to say run down, but it was literally like a hole in the wall.
But it was like the tables were like from 1970.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nothing.
Mismatched everything.
We had a hard time even finding the place, and we got in there and we ordered the food. And I'm talking about amazing.
Yes.
I mean, just amazing. And that's the beautiful thing about some of these cities that we've been talking about, especially Tucson, is you walk into these places that might be a hole in the wall, and you get such great food. And we love those places. Yeah. I don't know about you, Anne, but we love it when it's like, you know, you don't expect much. You go in there with low expectations. You walk out like mind blown.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Well, this has been amazing. And Anne, I know you have just a plethora of information, from you and Brian being out on the road for as long as you have been. How can folks find you, and where can they get more information about you?
So we are most present on Instagram and Facebook, and we are under On the Road of Adventure, all spelled out as single words for Facebook, and with no spacing and no nothing for Instagram. So you can find us there. We love to share our life and the places that we go, and then what I'm cooking at home when we're not out eating. So I'm doing a little bit of my own home cooking as well. And we do have a blog. We're kind of in between, need a little bit of web design help these days. But people can find us at ontheroadofadventure.com as well.
That's fantastic. And I'm sure all of our listeners have figured out by now that Anne knows a lot about just great eats and great food. So definitely get out there and follow her and her husband. Check out their adventures at On the Road. I'm like reading it. You got to say it because I'm
of
adventure, because it's literally yes. It's typed out in front of me as all one word and my brain's like on the road of adventure, on the road of adventure.
but you know, some of the cool things that Anne does, Anne reached out to me right before the Tampa RV show, and she had put together this wonderful blog, or social post, I call it, that talked about some of the best restaurants to eat while you're in Tampa at the RV show. And she asked if I minded sharing. I'm like, of course not. We absolutely be happy to share it. And just, she provides that great information, that great, you know, just stuff that you need to know to, you know, food is important to all of us. We have to eat to live,
but we have to eat to live.
You might as well eat at wonderful places, right?
Right. And enjoy
it. That's right.
And enjoy it. And don't forget that Anne is in every single one of our magazines. So, you know, since we have asked her to write for us and that time period moving forward, she's in every one. So you're always going to get a great write-up on some great restaurants that they have found in whatever area that they're visiting. So,
right. In the spring issue, she wrote on Madison, as we talked about, munching your way through Madison, and you can get your copy. That's going to be mailed out around April 15th. You should have that in your hand It's being mailed out in March. You should have that in your hand in April. I'm sorry, I get my dates wrong. Somewhere around March 1st. Around
there's
April 1st.
There's some time in some months that are going to get something from us.
You know, we moved the date on this special edition up till May, and so I'm getting that confused. But this issue will be mailed out around March 15th, and you should have it in your hand by April 1st. And she's talking about Madison in that issue.
So thank you so much, Anne, for joining us today. And
oh, it was my pleasure.
This was awesome.
Really?
Yeah, I think we got past all the nasty food fun facts at the beginning, so I'm back to being hungry, and I really want a Sonoran hot dog, and I don't know how that's going to happen, so I'm going to have to figure this out.
I got to figure out how I'm going to get to San Antonio again for that chicken.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Well, you're in Fredericksburg, and Callie, I heard her talking about it, so I think Fredericksburg's still pretty far away from Amarillo, but if you get a chance to get to Amarillo, you have to go to Braceros. I'm telling you, we don't make many recommendations. That's not true. We do. But Braceros is hands down
the best Mexican we've ever had
in our life. And that includes Mexico, you know, being in Mexico.
Authentic Mexico.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
I'll be saving that to my Google Maps, so thank you.
Yes, you are welcome. And for everybody out there listening, be sure to grab your PDF copy of the top 10 foodie cities across the United States. You can download that at www.rvdestinationsmagazine.com/top 10. And if you haven't subscribed to the magazine yet, get out there and subscribe at rvdestinationsmagazine.com/subscribe. If you use the code podcast20, we're going to give you 20% off any of our subscriptions. So thank you all out there for joining us today. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the RV Destinations podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Callie Beheimer, here with Randy Beheimer and Ann Klump, and we want to thank you all for listening.
Be safe.
Safe travels, y'all.
You've been listening to the RV Destinations podcast. Hitting the road in an RV is one of the most popular things to do nowadays, and it's our passion to clue you in on where to go and what to see. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, visit our website at www.rvdestinationsmagazine.com, and from there, you'll get a more in-depth look at destinations for the RVer. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next time on the RV Destinations Podcast.